Welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast special edition. This is November 1st, 2021, and this is the day in 1999 that we lost Walter Payton. This tribute show that I have here is bittersweet, that is for sure. Like so many friends of mine, known and unknown, famous and infamous, that have gone before me, I'm very, very sad that the world is without Walter Payton for so long, 22 years now. On the other hand, I am so glad that he was here. You know, that's the yin and the yang of our lives, is it not? That we're all headed in the same direction. How we get there, that's always different, but we're all headed to a place where at some point the game's over. And Walter Payton passed in 1999. He was a very young man. Most of the world got a chance to see him on the field. I had the opportunity to work with him for a few years off the field after he had retired in 1993. So, as the years have gone by, his influence has not waned on me at all. You know, I have this print behind my desk right here of the actual project, one of the big projects that I worked on with Walter Payton's office and him. It's a lithograph print that was done to commemorate his Hall of Fame induction back in 1993. And so it's a treasured piece of my history with his autograph on it. And just remembering, the efforts that went into to putting that together. I don't know how many times golfing at the golf tournaments. But all of those things are wedged in the back of my mind somewhere, especially on this day. And I've always said, you know, how people die is not nearly as important as how they live. The cause of death, that remains unknown for most of us until the time comes. But our cause in life, that becomes apparent over time as we're here. And I think about Walter Payton, of course, his football statistics and history and legacy as secured as it could be for any other guy that played the game. It's the stuff off the field, though, that resonates to this day. So fortunate, as I said, to work with him and to watch him up close with other people was like an education how to be a better human. So it's with all of that in mind that I'm up really early this morning. I stagger these shows to a certain degree, but this one had to be done today. I just put one up on Saturday, this past Saturday, about Halloween and my dad, the influence my dad had and those type of things. And typically I wouldn't be putting another one up for a week, but can't miss this day. This is November 1st. This is the day that we lost a giant in so many ways. So what I've done is I've gone back into the vast Life 2.0 archives, and I pulled up a show that I did from 2019 when it was the 20-year anniversary of Walter's passing, a conversation I had with his son, Jarrett. And I thought that's the easiest way to kind of take this to the next level. I could sit here for 40 minutes and rant and rave and talk about some of the things, the adventures and stuff. And that's all well and good. It's a great place. But Walter, in so many instances, was so much larger than life that I didn't know that I'd ever see someone like that again that had that kind of connection with people until I've watched Jarrett grow over the years into his father in so many ways. Before I drop the needle on this this interview, recently, just a couple weeks ago, I was out to lunch with Jarrett and two women who were the winners of Lunch with JP. So let me just push back a little bit. I'm pretty active in the alumni for my high school, Schurz High School in Chicago. And for the past 9 years, going on 9 years, we've done an event called the Bulldog Bash, where alumni come from all over the country and we have a hell of a good time at an incredible Italian restaurant, La Villa in Chicago. We go there and we raise a bunch of money for different projects and things that Schurz needs to be taken care of. And I came up with an idea this year to have a Legends Lunch or Lunch with a Legend. And my first legend of choice was Eric Soderholm, who played for the White Sox and 9 years in the major leagues. And he said yes. And my second reach out was to Tom Skilling, who is the weather guru of Chicago on Channel 9 here. And I also tag teamed him with my gal pal Jennifer Weigel, who is a vaunted journalist, best-selling author. You know, she's a legacy name here in the city. And then I reached out to Jarrett and I asked if he would do this. So the idea was, we'd have these silent auction items, and people would bid on the opportunity to go to lunch with these folks. And so two women, actually one woman won it and brought a friend of hers with, and I'll tell you about that in a second. So we went to the Flagship on the Fox, of which Jarrett is a part owner, an incredible restaurant. If you're in the St. Charles area, you know what I'm talking about. And it was fantastic. And Karen won the silent auction item. I watched these people go back and forth, bid all night, and she brought Miss Jerry. And Karen graduated from Schur's in 1970. I graduated in 1977, but Miss Jerry, she graduated in 1952. So it was quite a historical outing at this lunch with a legend thing. And when Jarrett walked in, the room lit up. He's got the smile on his face, the energy that he brings, the way he carries himself. And of course, everybody knows who he is. And he owns it, which is a good thing. And so we had a great lunch. And Miss Jerry and Karen, had sat with JP and a lot of conversation. It was a lot of fun. And at one point during lunch, I started to realize that, as I said just a few minutes ago, Jarrett has taken on that mantle of service and giving himself to something greater than himself. And his dad did that. And so we're sitting at this lunch and I'm just watching, thinking his dad would get it's like a clone. JP's taller, but my point is it's like watching his dad work the room and be in the room. So not only did he have lunch with us, he was very nice to take pictures with the ladies, but of course everybody else wants pictures with the guy, and he walks the room and he is effortless with people. I saw that in his dad. And so that's got me feeling good today. I miss Walter Payton, but Jarrett is here, and Brittany, Walter's daughter, is here, and I have a podcast that I work on with them, with Brittany and her partner, Caitlin Cody, who does the weather here in Chicago, and they tag team it for a podcast, and that'll be back starting next month. In December, we'll bring that back. So all in all, so many memories of Walter in my life, and to have remained in touch with Jarrett and Britt, and to watch them become the people that Walter was in some great degree, and Miss Connie Payton, such a huge influence in how these kids have grown up without her dad. It's just, when all the shit's hitting the fan in the world, I sit back and I think of the people that I know that are doing amazing things, which rarely get headlines, but they're the lifelines. That's when things kind of even out for me. So without further delay, this is a conversation from 2019 that I had with Jarrett about his dad. So they used to say that James Brown was the hardest working man in show business. James Brown's not here anymore. Jarrett Payton, at this point, is the hardest working man in show business. He's not only running his foundation and doing a ton of motivational talks, entrepreneurial stuff up the wazoo. I've gone in and seen his coffee. I've had beer with his name on it. He's had jewelry out. And I don't know when he finds time to sleep. He also does the sports for WGN, if you're listening to this in the Chicagoland area. Or any place you could pick up WGN television, you see JP doing the afternoon sports, which he's really was groomed to be able to do because he's got a great background as an athlete. So I wedged him in his car. He's on his phone, and we're going to take the time that we could get. JP, good to talk to you, brother.
What's up, man? That's a lot of stuff right there. It makes me feel like I'm old, like I got responsibilities on my hands, which I do now. I want to be like you when I grow up. That's my goal.
Well, okay. Listen, one of the things that I talked about in the open is the deep, deep, deep respect I had for your dad's work ethic. And I'm not talking about on the field. I'm talking about the guy that I knew off the field. When I met your pop, he had already retired. And everybody knew, of course, of his on-field exploits. But the man that I watched on a daily basis at Martingale Road in that office seemed to be able to transfer the same discipline and dedication to duty that he had on the field that made him the greatest football player ever, in my opinion, but also to transfer that to what he was doing with his work.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing to watch the way that he worked and how he was able to translate everything that he learned from playing football and the hard work and running the hill and then take that into the business world as well. And, you know, for me, that was the time that I really started to really understand, because my dad retired when I was 7. I don't really remember his playing career, but I do remember watching him in business and going along with him as I got older in my teens. And I don't know, it's just the thing now that I look back on, I'm 38 and I just have the utmost respect for him because of how hard it had to be. And, you know, for when you're playing football for 13 years, and it's what you've done for a long part of your life. And then next thing you know, that's over. You have to be able to transition, and to see him work as hard as he did. It's something that I just have always taken with me and have kind of used in my life now as well. And people say they see it in me. I mean, I guess I can see it now because of, you know, all the things that I'm doing, but I don't know, man. It's just something that was born with. And it's something that I think, you know, my dad, you know, he also just wanted to be able to pass it along to me as well, to show me, because he knew I was a visual learner, to see that if you want something, you got to go get it. And man, that was just his whole motto. Never die easy. Go and get it. You know, work hard, play hard. And that's what I'm doing in my life right now.
So number one, you're almost 40?
Yeah, man.
Dude.
I'll be, yeah.
Oh.
It's crazy. I know. Listen, I'll be 39 this year, December 26th. And, I feel like I'm in my 20s, man. I feel so young, and I think it's the same way that when I looked at my dad growing up after he got out of football, I mean, he just took care of himself. He always took care of himself. He made sure that he was, you know, still fit. He wasn't running the hill anymore, but he was still doing like little workouts and little things. And, you know, genetics are a powerful thing, man. Yeah. So to be a mix of him and my mom and have some good genes, all I gotta do is jump on the Peloton for a little bit, man, and like 25 minutes and I'm good.
You know, and this is what's interesting to me is there's so much to talk about in so little time, but one of the projects I worked on with your pop was the whole WWF thing at the United Center. And you were just, how old were you then? 13?
I was in middle school at that time.
You were like a tadpole, man. I remember you being there. Listen, so we go down, and I know you remember this, but you talk about your dad being in shape. We go into the locker room, and all these huge wrestlers are there. I mean, these guys are giants, really. And I remember walking out, getting something to drink, and walking back, and there's this whole line of guys outside of the locker room thinking, why are these guys lined up? They lined up to get your dad's autograph. And he was standing there signing these autographs, talking to each one of them, you know, and they were all like 13-year-old kids themselves when they were waiting in line. And when we got ready to do the event, he was teamed up with Razor Ramon. And about 6 weeks earlier, Ramon had been in Chicago. We did these promotional videos, which were freaking hilarious. And to this day, I see that, hey, Chuco, you know, he's going through this whole thing, and your dad's standing there. And he's like, that's right, we're going to come for you. It was so much fun. But before he went to the ring, he gives me his wallet, gives me his car keys. We took a limo, but he always carried his car keys anyway. And he gave me his watch, and he flips upside down, and he says, hold my ankle. So he's doing upside down inverted push-ups in the locker room to pump up his shoulders and arms, which didn't need any help to begin with. And then we tied off his jersey. And when he walked out in front of 25,000 people, JP, I had never seen that. I mean, it was one thing to do it at Soldier Field for 60,000, but those 25,000 people just showered him with love. I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I mean, that was like perfect for him. If he tried to figure something else out to do in life, I think it should have been wrestling. But I'll never forget that moment either. Seeing you know, these guys that I, you know, watched on TV be in awe of my dad. And it just goes to show the crossover and the respect level that these guys had for him playing a whole different sport, and to see that he could also fit in as well. And John, you know, that was the special thing about him. He was able to fit in wherever he needed to. And he was like a chameleon. And I think that's one of the coolest things that I remember about him.
He treated everybody, whether it was the president, Michael Jackson, or some kid that was sick, exactly the same. That is a rare commodity. And you know, look, I'm going to butter your bread because we don't get a chance to spend as much time together as we used to, because you're a big TV guy now. You know, you're busy. You got stuff to do. But listen, I've seen you do the same thing. Not long ago, you helped produce and hosted an incredible TV special about your dad. And we were all together at a bar downtown in Chicago. And I watched you stand up in front of all these people, some of which had no idea what was going on. They just were eating dinner there.
Yeah, man. It was a special day and a special night as well, just to be able to share, you know, some of the stories of my dad with these people. And Savor and Sweetness took a long time to produce, and Rick Tarsentano, my producer, and I, we went through a lot of stuff, had to change the whole entire documentary up, and it was only supposed to be a half hour, ended up being an hour. Mm-hmm. And to see that it could bring grown men like yourself to tears, man, that's pretty special right there.
You know, it is very difficult. The media is a difficult business to begin with. And even though I know he's your pop and I know I get all that, it's still to capture that lifetime and the impact that your dad made in an hour even was a daunting task. But how difficult was it for you to stand back from this project, which you're so close to, and be able to create it the way you did?
It was interesting because there's so much that you could kind of put in. There were so many different interviews that you could do, a lot of people you could talk to, but we kind of had to narrow it down. And everything just was like kind of like a puzzle, John. You had to like piece the puzzle together and try to figure out what goes where and put it all in a timeline and try to figure out that timeline. And I think we captured it in a unique perspective because yes, it's the stuff that you've seen already in some of the bigger, like, documentaries of my dad, but this one kind of all came to a head at the time where it was me, where some of them don't mention that part, but it was, you know, when my dad didn't really want to be involved in my decision of where I was going to go, like, on camera. He was there behind the scenes talking about where he wanted me to go, but he knew with all the weight that he lost when he got sick that me doing my press conference at St. Vider, that means if he was there, cameras are going to be there, they're going to be around him, and that could open up the floodgates. And so to be able to go and put all that together and then that part comes up, it brought back so many different memories, good and bad, and also just brought it back a lot of memories of my family and just everything that we went through. And now being a dad, you know, it's just, it puts it all in perspective now of, like, you know, dad being there for me and then, you know, him having to go and do his press conference himself and then he's leaning on me. It was like, man, it all came full circle, and that's what the project pretty much did for me once we were finished.
I had a really difficult time. I said to myself, I'm not going to cry. I'm going to go into this wide open. It's going to be a great experience. It'll be good to see him again and all that kind of stuff. But what got me wasn't seeing him, it was hearing his voice. And it was in the context of everything you did. I mean, there's YouTube videos and all, I get that. But this was different. There was something about being in there, knowing that you had created this. And maybe about 20 minutes in, I was done. I was toast. I'm like, I couldn't do this. Was it emotionally difficult for you to sit through this over and over again in production?
Yeah, it was. It was very emotional. Not throughout the process, it was more of leading up to the day that it aired, and you know, and not and only that, it was the statue of my dad as well, which happened the day before, and then the Bears game. There's just a lot going on in my life at that moment, and it was all about him. It was all about dad, and it just made me remember how much that I miss him and how much that I wish he was around, and I don't know, man. It just all brought it back into perspective that, listen, he's always around, but we miss him here physically. Like, he's still with us in spirit. People talk about him every day, but I just wish he was around because there's so many things as a dad now that I would want to talk to him about. A lot of stuff as a businessman I would like to talk to him about. And I just always think in my head, what would he be doing right now? And actually just thinking about all the things I probably think he would be doing right now.
One of my remembrances from the unveiling of the statue, which is a 12-foot-high, 3,000-pound bronze, along with George Halas. And I don't recall the name of the guy that did the sculpting, but here's the thing that got me the first thing. When they took that tarp off, JP, his hands looked like his hand.
That was a process as well, and going through all that. And I think really seeing that from the beginning to the big, huge clay sculpture of him when he was sitting in Philadelphia, and we had to go out there to see it and to look at his face and how his face looks just like his. And I mean, it just, I remember sitting there for 10 minutes just crying and wanting to talk to him. And he looked like literally he was going to walk off of the little slab that he was on. And so now to be able to go to Soldier Field every single Sunday to walk past him, to see people who wanted to sit around waiting to take pictures with him. Man, it's a feeling, John, I can't even tell you about it. It's just it's a cool, cool feeling, but it does. It brings back to, you know, all the hard work that he put into. I mean, you know what he did and why he did it. And I mean, he probably wouldn't say this, but he wanted to be remembered and he wanted people to remember him. And he accomplished that. He truly did, not just as a football player, but as a person as well. And I think that's what's so special about this is that 20 years later, people are still talking about him. They're still wearing his jersey. They're still, you know, they get emotional when they talk about him because he made an impact and it was on and off the field. And, that's why I say he's the greatest of all time, not just football player. He's the greatest person that I've ever met.
Tell me about the work you do with the foundation, because I know that your dad and, of course, your mom and Brittany, you guys all did a lot of, and still do a lot of things. They get the toys at Christmas time at Soldier Field and hand those out. But you've really focused in on the bullying and the difficult things that kids are going through now that may have been going on when your dad was around, but there wasn't any social media or unsocial media. You've really used this to your advantage to get a message that's very positive out.
Yeah, the message in with my foundation, the Jared Payton Foundation, is just really about impacting kids and letting them know that they are great and that they have leadership qualities inside of them and that they're more similar than they are different. And I just want to kind of leave my imprint, leave my impact on some kids. So one day down the line, and one of these kids that I spoke at their school will come and talk to my son and daughter and say, man, your dad made an impact. Like, for me, money has never been the motivator for what I do. I mean, I know you have to make money to be able to survive and take care of your family. But for me, the thing that I struggle with probably the most is that, like my dad, I want to be remembered. I want people to remember me for something special. I want them to talk about me in the same light as they talk about my dad as a person. And I think that's probably what I struggle with the most, instead of like all the other stuff that I think most people kind of deal with. But my family dynamic is just a little different, and how I was raised and having a famous dad, and a lot of it is different. A lot of the stuff that I've always done has been into the forefront and then into the spotlight and for my foundation, and being able to speak to close to 40,000 kids the last 4 years. It's really gives me an opportunity to be there and just kind of give my message and talk about my life story. And this now, over the years that I've been doing this, I've been really seeing the people that I've truly made an impact on in their lives. And that's right there. That's worth all the money in the world right there.
Real quick, over to your own professional career. You played college at the U, and you were the MVP at the 04 Orange Bowl, and you went on to play 2 years with the Titans and the Amsterdam Admirals in NFL Europe, and had a pretty good run with all that. And then you decided at some point, obviously, that it wasn't going to go in the same direction that your dad's went. You had to make that decision to step out of that, which is a decision he had to make as well at some point. How difficult was that for you to step out of a career that the most famous football player who has ever had a helmet on excelled at? Was that difficult to work your way through that?
Just a little bit. I mean, because, you know, all your life, that's all you've ever done. I mean, since I was playing soccer at 4 years old, I played sports nonstop from 4 all the way up till I was 30 years old. So for me, it was a transition that I was very scared of and did not know and was not confident, because, I mean, all my life, sports became easy. And so I was confident in that any sport that I played, that I could work, and I knew how to work to be able to get to where I need to get to. And then in the real world, it's a little different. There's no playbook to show you. You have to basically learn on your own. You have to fail on your own, and you have to be able to really kind of gain that confidence from all the mistakes and some of the good stuff that you do. And I really had no clue. And I still remember this day when my wife and I, we were dating at the time, and I was just got released from Tennessee Titans, and we were sitting in her condo downtown in Chicago, and she wrote on a piece of paper, she's like, here, we're going to do this. We're going to do short-term goals, like 3 years, and then 5 years, and then 10 years. Like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I have no clue. Mm-hmm. And we started writing stuff down, and it's funny now to look at that sheet of paper and see all the things that we've crossed off and the things that I've been able to do. And a lot of it I didn't go to school for, so I've had to learn. I've had to have some successes. I've had some failures, and I've learned from everything. And I think that's what gives you the confidence. And if you can have confidence with anything, John, you can pretty much achieve anything. It's just not giving up when things don't go right. It's keep going and trying to figure out how to make it right. And that's what I've done, you know, throughout my professional career now after I was done playing football.
I told you, I've told you this quite a few times in private it's not hard, especially when you smile to see your dad's face. But the day that I knew that there was a merging of the spirit here, this is 2019. This got to be 8-9 years ago. It can't be 10, but maybe somewhere there. You and I asked if you'd play golf with me, and it was a tournament of some kind for a smaller organization. They asked us to come play, and we did. And they asked if you'd speak after dinner, and I'm like, oh great, they're going to let him talk. They're going to skip the guy that does the TED talks, and you're going to let Peyton talk. Okay, fine. And when you were talking with no script, which is how it should be, right from the heart, I watched the room lean in to you. I was sitting in the back. I watched the room lean in. And in the corner, there was a guy that I played semi-pro with. And there was a group of Gold Star families whose sons had died in action. They were all Marines. And they were sitting in the back corner. And I knew the guy. And we talked a little bit. And then we all took our seats. And I looked at all the tables, but that table in particular, who had lost their sons in battle, the ultimate sacrifice. And I, you know, I'm watching them gaining value from the words that you're saying. And I thought, oh, there's his dad. And then at that moment, like, okay, he's off the hook. He's okay. He's good to go. I got to take the time to say the things that need to be said, because tomorrow, as your dad would always say, is promised to none of us. What's been fascinating and incredible to me, and a blessing really, and a gift, is to watch this 13-year-old kid, this gangly 13-year-old kid at the WWF United Center with his, you know, with the big styrofoam number one finger, having a great time, to watch this this transition over the years of watching you. Because, you know, there are people that have a name on their back that don't do well with it, and both you and your sister, Brittany, have done very well with carrying on the respect of the Peyton name. But to watch this ladder you've been climbing every now and again, I'm thinking, man, and so if I go from that event to the guy that I saw standing in the bar 2 months ago crying, I'm like, yeah, he's still there. That's a good thing.
Well, I'll tell you this. It's, you know, I was raised well. My parents taught me good values and how to be a good person. And so I'm just very, very thankful that I've had some really good people in my corner. And I couldn't do all this stuff by myself. And especially now, my wife, Trisha, she's the best. She's a big reason for my success. And I found someone that could truly match my speed and how I move and how I work. And I sometimes don't, I have the ideas. I don't know how to get them out. She knows how to get them out. She can take those. And we became a great team. But even you, man, I mean, you've seen me like you talked about. I mean, I still remember at the Oprah Studios and you talking to me, and like me at that moment not knowing what I was going to do with my life to where I am now. And it does. I take a lot of pride in that. I take a lot of pride in people that have seen me, have watched me grow up, and most of the city of Chicago has seen me grow up. So I put that on my back. I put it on my back, put it on my shoulders, saying, listen, I'm going to do my best to be able to carry on this legacy in the right way. I'm not always going to be perfect. I'm not always going to be right, but I'm going to do it from the heart. I'm going to do what I feel is right. And, you know, sometimes I'm not going to be asking, you know, for, I'm not asking anymore. Like, not, I don't have to do that anymore. What I'm here to do and what I'm blessed to do is to be able to lead by example. And so I do that, and I wear it as a badge of honor. And any time that I can truly, truly just be myself, which is all the time. I mean, I I try to. You should see me at home. Like, people don't get to see me at home. Like, on my Instagram, they get to see what I do at home. And it's funny because they're like, holy cow, man. Like, all you do is basically, like, joke around with your kids and have fun. I'm like, yeah, basically, that's really what all I do anyway. So to be able to be me and not have to put on a mask or some type of, like, suit and, like, mask, that makes me happy. And I will never do that, John. I will never do that. I will be myself. And I'm just so lucky that I even have a job at WGN where my boss, Jen Lyons, she tells me all the time, like, you just be you. Like, don't be like everybody else. And because, you know, I studied like everybody else that's done my job, like Dan Lone and Rich King and all these other guys. It's a new day and age. I can take stuff from them, but I'm a creator. I'm going to create like what I want to be. I'm going to create what's going to be new. And that's my goal, because guess what? There's going to be some kid that's growing up now, doesn't know what he wants to do or she wants to do, and looks to me for inspiration. And I want them to see what I do, and I want them to take it. And I want them to go even further than I did. So that's my goal.
Listen, every now and again, when I catch you doing the sports, I sit back and laugh. And I think if your dad was around, first of all, he'd love Instagram. He'd be all about that, number one. And number two, he'd probably be texting you when you're on the air trying to get you to crack up, right? So he'd be doing something to knock you off course a little bit, you know?
Or he would be sitting somewhere in the studio, like, watching me, you know?
But man. Two things, and I'll cut you loose. Number one is, I'm going to go back to this 38-year-old thing, because you're really going to be, if you're that old, then I'm really old. So no more of that shit. No more. I don't want to know how old you are anymore. This is a bittersweet time for a lot of people. The people listening to the show, and myself included, revered your pop. And I was so fortunate to be in his orbit for as long as I was. And even more so to watch you and your mom and Britt do the things that you do. And make, you're like the first family of Chicago, where that's how so many people see you. On this 20th anniversary, what's the big takeaway? What should people know most about your pop all these years later that maybe they don't know and need to be reminded of?
I think people look at him as superhero. He was everybody's superhero. But I truly want people to remember that he was a human being. He was just like everybody else. And he went through, you know, some good times in his life, and he went through some rough times as well. But he fought through everything, and he kept fighting, and he made sure that he was always going to put his best foot forward. And I think just as people, we got to understand that. Like, in the climate that we live in now, we're so driven by likes and retweets and posts and all this other stuff. And sometimes it takes us out of our reality of what's really going on. I see people posting pictures and, you know, smiling, and then I know them, and I know what's going on in their life. Like, you can only mask it for so long and try to hide from it. But if you can take that same mentality that my dad had about fighting through the hard times and figuring out how, you know, how to get through something, and anything's possible. And that's what my dad showed me, that anything's possible. You put your mind to it, you put your heart to it, you put some hard work into it. And if people can know that that's how he lived his life, and I know that they revere him and they love him, if they can live like that in some way, they can pretty much achieve anything.
So I appreciate you taking the time to listen about Sweetness. I hope that you were able to gather and garner some perspective and maybe some value from what Jared had to offer up. And to me, the best thing about all of this is that this is, to me, the great lesson of legacy. When you live your life in a certain way, and that is not about talking about how to do it, but doing it, you can't help but not make a ripple effect. And a guy like Walter Payton, people loved him for what he did on the field, but he was even more loved, I know, for what he did off the field. And to me, that's not unlike our lives as well. What you do professionally is one thing. That's what you're paid to do. That's how you earn your living. But who you are personally, that the only recompense for that is how you move in the world. That's really where the rubber meets the road. That's where it's really most important. And that's what Walter Payton did. Thanks for listening. Be well. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.